Chapter 33. We are committed, Wedge told himself, as explosions bloomed like time-lapse fire flowers over nightside Korallag. Its surface etched with intersecting trails of light, the core world filled the bridge viewports of Mon Mothma. Between the planet and the refitted star destroyer floated Yuuzhan Vong Matalox and Yorika Kaga. Blushed cruisers and pearlescent pickets, arrayed to provide cover for a swift-moving Yamask carrier cluster ship. Harried by squadrons of X and E-wings, disgorged from the warships, Mon Adapine and Alegos Akla, the enemy vessels were saturating local space with blazing projectiles and gouts of superheated ejecta, but they were already beginning to pay the price for having been caught unawares. A state of controlled frenzy prevailed on Mon Mothma's bridge, with couriers and officers coming and going, and Wedge attempting to sustain half a dozen separate conversations. Displays flickered and computer consoles chirped as updates were transmitted from gunnery, communications, and tactical centers elsewhere in the ship. As accustomed to the noise as Wedge had become, he couldn't help but reflect on the reasons that had prompted his retirement, especially now in the wake of Akbar's death. His uniform and command cap felt borrowed from someone two sizes smaller. The surprise attack had required his battle group to jump directly from Khontrum to the Bormia sector, inserting as close to Korallag as was achievable, given the planet's several moons and formidable defenses. Once the site of an Imperial Navy base, the largest moon had been transformed into a kind of rest facility for enemy patrol vessels assigned to the Perlemian trade route. Scimitar assault bombers were laying waste to the facility now, while Shocker and Black Moon Squadron starfighters nipped at the Yamask carrier like packs of rapacious howl runners. "Generals Farlander and Selchu have the enemy boxed in," Mon Mothma's commander reported. "Harbinger has dropped from hyperspace and is pressing forward at battle speed to rendezvous with Alegos Akla at Rally Point Manka Flechette Dubak." With Mon Mothma too far removed to allow for visual contact with any of the capital ships, Wedge studied the tactical console's checkerboard of display screens. Determined to shield the Yamask vessel, the Yuuzhan Vong cruisers were indeed bracketed by Mon Adapine and Alegos Akla, both of which were lancing the enemy configuration with continuous bursts of turbolaser fire. And now, closing fast, was Harbinger, the Mon Cal cruiser commanded by Garm Bel Iblis. Caught in the crossfire, coral skippers were being pulverized almost as fast as they could be deployed. With its quick-response cannons and gravity well generators, Mon Mothma was seeing to any skips that escaped the cordon. Korallag itself was taking punishment. Evidence of orbital bombardment and surface fighting, infrared hotspots were flaring in and around many of the major cities. Decrypted transmissions revealed that the fighting was intense and atrocities were widespread. Unlike other worlds along that important stretch of the Perlemian, Chandrilla, Brental, and Raltir, Korallag had capitulated to the Yuuzhan Vong to escape devastation. No one had expected otherwise of a planetary government that had supported the Emperor during the Galactic Civil War and had since been forced to languish in Coruscant's shadow. Regardless, most of Korallag's 10 billion citizens opposed the puppet government set up by the Yuuzhan Vong, and simmering discontent had finally erupted into open rebellion. The wealthiest and most influential families fled for Kuat and Kaminor. But there was no evading the Yuuzhan Vong. Kuat had fallen soon after Senator Pwo's brief visit, and Kaminor had been hit hard and repeatedly. Galvanized by the rescue of Korallag's unofficial hero, Judder Page, resistance groups on and off-world had reached out to the Alliance for help in liberating the planet, at whatever cost to life and limb. Sav and Creefe couldn't have been more receptive to in-system support for the invasion. If Korallag could be reclaimed, the Alliance would hold a key hyperspace position in the core. even two standard months earlier, an assault would have proved catastrophic. Yuuzhan Vong forces had been deployed well into the slice. From Khorasan through Al Sakin, almost all the way to Khorelag, and from Ixtlar and Wakar on the Karelian run a quarter of the way around the Khor toward Kuat and Kaminor. But with dozens of battle groups withdrawn to join the armada, Khorelag had been left vulnerable at last. Wedge's gaze was still glued to the displays when Captain Devis drew his attention to a tight formation of fighter craft emerging from Khorelag's crescent of Transitor. "Ties?" Wedge said in genuine surprise. "Ours or theirs?" "I'm not sure, sir. Then find out." "Transmission from Kuramel," Lieutenant Sell interrupted while Devis was hurrying off. "Governor Foradel, sir." Wedge recognized the name of Khorelag's capital city, but not the name of the governor. Nodding curtly to the comm officer, he swung to the hollow projector, where a quarter-scale human figure stood in the noisy field. "We've been waiting almost 2 years for this," Foradel said jubilantly. Sporting an eye patch and a floppy cap, he could have stepped from a suspense holodrama. "Khorelag will forever be indebted to the Alliance." "The battle's not won yet," Wedge said. "And just who are you, anyway?" Foradel saluted awkwardly. "The Resistance has appointed me provisional governor." "Where's the former governor?" Foradel smiled. "I'm glad you asked, because I've been eager to show you." Images from what were obviously Kuramel media feeds began to resolve in the hollow field. One showed the former governor hanging by the neck in a city square, while a lynch mob of humans and humanoids pelted him with stones. Other scenes showed bound and bloodied Yuuzhan Vong and other members of the occupation government being dragged or shoved through the streets by crowds of vigilantes. Wedge was thankful that he hadn't been asked to oversee ground-based operations, as he had done at Borlias. Soon enough, similar scenes of vengeance would be repeated on countless worlds. The rage was understandable and reminiscent of the retributions that had been doled out to Imperial forces in the wake of the Emperor's death. And Wedge held little sympathy for the captured Yuuzhan Vong warriors. All his life he had fought for what he believed in, and for the protection of those he loved. Iella, his daughters, his sister and friends. And the Yuuzhan Vong had nearly torn his world and family apart. A point could be made that the Yuuzhan Vong fought for similar reasons, but the invaders had yet to demonstrate even an instance of charity or tolerance. Worship and blind obedience substituted for love and honor. And yet, for all his soldiers' resolve, Wedge recognized that he could still be rattled by a canny glance from Luke Skywalker. Listening to him and Mara address the command staff on Ral Roost, Wedge had been struck once more by the fact that the Alliance and the Jedi were waging very different wars against the Yuuzhan Vong. Where Alliance command measured victory in terms of control, the Jedi were focused on a means of ending the war that would also conclude a cycle of violence. Luke feared that the extermination of the Yuuzhan Vong would deal a death blow to the newly hatched Galactic Federation of Free Alliances. With a single step toward the dark side, the fate of future generations would be sealed. As was true with the Yuuzhan Vong, the Jedi were prepared to martyr themselves to an ideal. Both were fighting to sustain a worldview. At the center of one stood the gods, at the center of the other, the Force. Wedge wondered what might become of those Yuuzhan Vong who weren't burned or beaten to death in the streets of Kuramel or some other once-occupied capital city. What was the next step after disarmament? Imprisonment? Exile? Could an entire species be put on trial for its beliefs? And even if found guilty of war crimes, would the Yuuzhan Vong permit themselves to be isolated under guard in some remote star system? Or would their defeat, the fact that they had failed their gods, drive them to self-destruction? Should self-extinction be accepted as an alternative because death figured so strongly in their society, Or would the death of the extragalactic species upset the balance of the Force in some fashion? That such questions were best left to the Jedi was the reason Wedge, Kean Farlander, certainly Tennel Ka, and many other Alliance commanders had implicit faith in Luke's leadership. At Borlias, when Wedge himself had formed the secret resistance group known as the Insiders, he had essentially made a pact with the Force and felt duty-bound to uphold it. "You've entered a reign of evil, General Antilles," Foradel was saying from the hollow field. "You should be proud." Wedge cut the provisional governor off before he could continue. "Our scanners have picked up a squadron of TIE fighters launched from Coromel." "Peace Brigaders," Foradel explained. "The fighters were restored from parts warehoused at the old Imperial Academy." "Hunt them down, General. Don't leave a single ship unscathed." "That's all the information I need at the moment, Governor." Wedge waved for Lieutenant Sell to end the holo transmission with Coromel, then said, "Alert General Selchu that those TIEs are not friendlies. Tell him that Harbinger has his back if he needs help dealing with them." The fighting above Nightside Coralag was heating up. Coral skippers and snub fighters were engaged in a mad dance of mutual destruction, while the capital ships they flew from were attempting to pummel one another senseless with plasma missiles and energy bolts. Two globules of the cluster vessel had imploded, but judging by the performance of the swarming skips, the war coordinator was uninjured. On the moon, bombers were continuing to hammer the repair installation, but they were now taking fire from ground-based KDY turbo lasers, probably refurbished by the same turncoat technicians who had resurrected the TIEs. "Sir, Admiral Creefay," Sell said from her duty station. Wedge strode back to the holo projector in time to see Creefay's image take shape amid random bursts of diagonal static. "General Antilles," the Bothan began, "on your say-so, I'm prepared to move Raoul Roost and elements of the First Fleet to Coralag." Wedge shook his head. "We need more time here, Admiral. A couple of standard hours at least." "You have 1 hour, General," Creefay said evenly. "We've received word from Coruscant that our actions at Coralag have not gone unnoticed. Nas Choka's armada is active. It's not clear just yet whether the Warmaster is repositioning his vessels to defend Coruscant, or if he intends to move the armada rimward in advance of going to hyperspace. If it's the latter, I doubt he'll squander his forces by reinforcing Coralag. He may, however, elect to jump the armada to Khontrum, and I want to be gone from here by then." "Where do you want us?" Wedge asked. "Take Mon Adapine and Alegos Akla and rally with the Second Fleet at Muscave. I realize I'm placing your battle group in harm's way by sending you directly into the Coruscant system, but our objective is to accomplish the reverse of what we did at Mon Calamari by drawing the enemy into engagements at outer system worlds. Concurrently, I'll be dispatching elements of the Third Fleet to Coruscant from the Shawkan Spur of the Hidian, and elements of the Fourth by way of the Marshall Cross. Regardless of whether the armada jumps for Khontrum or advances to engage your forces at Muscave, the assault on Coruscant can commence." "Did I hear right that Vanguard Squadron has been attached to the Fourth Fleet?" Wedge asked. "That's correct." "That means that the Chiss will be directly involved in the assault on Coruscant." "Vanguard and Twin Sons have been folded into a single squadron, commanded by Group Commander Fell." Wedge was perplexed. "Jag is leading Twin Sons. Where's Jaina?" "Jedi Skywalker asked that we exempt her from the roster," Creefay muttered. "I recognize that Coruscant is a long way from Chiss space, and I know that you're concerned for the welfare of your nephew, Wedge, but Jag himself requested the mission." Wedge nodded. "I'll just have to find a way to explain to my sister why I didn't talk some sense into her son." Creefay gestured noncommittally. "Colonel Fell's group along with Rogue and Wraith squadrons, will fly escort for the troop transports and gunships we hope to slip through Coruscant's Dovin Basel gravitic wells. Once planetside, Captain Page's commando company will rendezvous with resistance forces and proceed to the landing field at what was Westport. Mon Mothma's tactical officer sent a star chart of the Coruscant system to the holoprojector. Wedge saw that Coruscant and the outer worlds of Muscave and Stentat were all on the same side of the sun, within 60 degrees of one another. Calculating the time required for the hyperspace jump to Muscave, Wedge's battle group would be arriving just as Shimra's Citadel and the Sacred Precinct were heading into daybreak. "Admiral, is Zonama Seacoat still orbiting between Muscave and Stentat?" "To the best of our knowledge," Creefe said, "but that planet is the Jedi's problem, not ours." Even before the transmission from Raoul Roost faded, Wedge spun on his heel to Lieutenant Sell. "Inform General Selchu and Farlander that we will be repositioning in one standard hour. Then find me a secure frequency to Errant Venture and patch it through to my comlink." Replacing his command cap with a headset, Wedge paced away from the bridge duty stations while the link to Booster Tarek's Star Destroyer was being established. "Insider One, your transmission is secure," a voice said through Wedge's earphones. "Lando here, Wedge." Wedge adjusted the fit of the headset. "Lando, in just under a standard hour, I'll be repositioning my group to Muscave." "Good news. That means Zonama Seacoat will be inside your lines." "Not as good as it sounds. Alliance Command has written the planet off as the Jedi's concern." "You think it'll go to hyperspace?" "I don't know, Lando, but some of us should be there in case anyone needs to be evacuated." "You can count on us, Insider One. I'll also pass the word to Tenel Ka." "May the Force be with you, Lando." "It had better be." Mired at Khontroom for longer than they had anticipated, Luke and Mara had missed the Seed Partners ceremony, but everyone who had participated was still talking about it long after Jade Shadow returned to Zonama Seacoat. Kip, Corrin, and Saba spoke in wonderment of having been led across a symbolic bridge and through a lamina-surfaced tunnel into concealed courtyards, filled with Faroan celebrants wearing brightly colored costumes. Having adhered to a special diet, the Jedi candidates had worn sashed robes and necklaces strung with blood-red, gourd-like fruits. Following a series of litanies chanted by Magister Jabitha and the Faroans, each of the candidates had to offer a gift and introduce him or herself to Seacoat in a way that reminded Kip of the ceremony that had taken place at Ithor 4 years earlier. Finally, the Seed Partners emerged from their shells as pale oblate bulbs, with eye spots and tiny grasper-equipped legs, had been separated from their bond partners and conveyed to the cybernetic organisms that would summon lightning and give shape to the living ships produced from the seeds. Bred by Zonama Seacoat's original magisters, the cyborgs were known as the Gentari. After listening to a dozen separate accounts of the ceremony from as many Jedi, Luke almost felt as if he had attended it personally, and he was eager to see the living ships. Seacoat had extensive conversations with Danny, and now Silgal, about Dovin Basels, and Lobaka and others were trying to figure a way to use comlinks for ship-to-ship communication. With so much information to catch up on, Luke had decided to wait for the proper moment to report on the briefings at Khontroom. He chose to do that in the Skywalker's cliff dwelling, even though few Jedi were present. Assembled were Jason, Jaina, Kip, Corrin, Saba, Tahiri, Danny, Han, Leia, Magister Jabitha, Harar, C-3PO, and R2-D2. Jason was the first one to comment on Luke's lengthy summary.
"Did you explain to Admiral Creefe what the world brain will do if Coruscant's attacked?"
"Half of the command staff has dismissed the report you furnished," Luke said, "and the other half just doesn't want to believe it." Han growled in exasperation.
Forget about the world brain. Can Creefe even get past the planetary Dovenbasils? Mara glanced at Luke.
You know, they never really answered that question. Sov said that they weren't worried about the Dovenbasils.
I think I know why, Luke said. Zonama Seacoat not only tugged one of Coruscant's moons out of orbit, but also tore apart the planetary ring that the Yuuzhan Vong manufactured from the moon they managed to shatter. The Dovenbasils are probably so busy dealing with infalling debris that they can now be overwhelmed by lasers, concussion missiles, and whatever else Creefe plans to hurl at them.
That still won't stop the world brain from carrying out its tasks, Jason said.
That's correct, Harar said, then looked questioningly at Jason.
I wasn't able to communicate with the Duryam while we were in the unknown regions, and I haven't been able to sense it in the same way since we got back.
Then perhaps Shimra has managed to establish a rapport with the brain. Harar turned to Luke. You must understand, Shimra is not an ordinary Yuuzhan Vong. His body and his mind have been enhanced. His powers surpass those of other supreme overlords.
Leia forced a sad exhalation.
Hundreds of thousands will die, and the planet will be of no use to anyone.
Unless we can get to Shimra first, Luke said. Harar nodded. The supreme overlord is our ultimate weapon. This war cannot possibly be won without defeating him. Because Shimra is our sole conduit to the gods, his capture or death will prove chaotic for Naschoka's warriors and Jakan's priests. Without Shimra's intercession, the gods will not be able to help or intervene in any way. Separated from the gods, the warriors and priests will be bereft. But capturing Shimra, let alone killing him, will be exceedingly difficult. He is well protected by skillful guards and by the world ship itself, which responds to him much as Yuuzhan Tar responds to the world brain.
Can the Citadel be penetrated? Luke asked.
With the Armada fending off an attack, the Dovenbasils and world brain preoccupied. The Shamed Ones in revolt. Yes, it might be possible to infiltrate with a small force. I could advise you on the best route.
You do that?
Leia said, gazing at Harar.
The priest nodded. I said I would do everything in my power to help end this conflict. Nothing has happened to cause me to reconsider that.
Who and how many of us? Kip asked.
Luke thought for a moment.
Not more than six of us, and no one who is waiting for a Seacoatan ship.
Kip nodded, and Han and Leia traded uncertain glances.
"Where's that leave the rest of us?" Han asked.
Before Luke could answer the question, Kenth, Silgal, and Lobaka entered the cliff dwelling, the Wookiee ducking low enough to keep from banging his furry head into the crude beams that spanned the high ceiling.
"Someone calmed Jade's shadow," Luke said.
Kenth nodded. The Alliance has reclaimed Korlag. Wedge's battle group has been ordered to Muscave to lure the Armada away from Coruscant so the major offensive can begin.
Then the war is coming to us, Jabitha said softly.
Errant Venture is on the way here, Silgal added, in case you're thinking of evacuating the Faroans or anyone else.
Jaina shot to her feet.
I should be with my squadron.
Mara looked at her.
You are, Jaina.
How's that? She asked harshly. I'm not in line for a living ship, and my X-Wing is still in stationary orbit.
I mean that you're needed here, Mara said calmly.
While Jaina stared at her aunt in indecision, Han put his arm around Jaina's waist.
Let's just see how things develop, okay?
Jaina nodded mutely.
Should Seacoat be warned? Danny asked.
I'm sure Seacoat already knows, Luke said. I think that's the reason Seacoat agreed to provide us with ships.
I must caution all of you that Seacoatan ships are for defense only, Jabitha interjected. Sonama has other defensive weapons, but Seacoat has not spoken of those in some time.
Mara looked at Luke.
Presumably the same ones that repelled the original Far Outsiders and annihilated Commander Vowell's forces at Classa Ephemera, Luke said.
Luke, we're talking about an armada. Han thought to point out, Seacoat might want to at least think about warming up the hyperspace drives.
Jabitha shook her head. Flight would be a demonstration of fear. Zonama Seacoat will not flee a second time, especially now with so much at stake.
Danny glanced around in puzzlement. It's irrelevant, isn't it? If Zonama Seacoat is an evil omen for the Yuuzhan Vong, then Shimra would want his forces to give it the widest berth.
Everyone turned to Harar.
It depends on who knows what, and if anything, how much.
The priest stroked his chin with his three-fingered hand.
Assuming that they have some limited understanding of Zonama Seacoat, the warriors would first have to be convinced that they weren't defying the gods by attacking the planet.
He raised his head in sudden apprehension.
Unless Shimra has managed to convince them that Zonama Seacoat is some sort of Jedi weapon or fabrication that must be destroyed.
How soon before the living ships are flight ready? Kip asked Jabitha in a rush.
In time, the Magister said. Seacoat will make certain of it.